Okay.
Is Maurice here? She just popped up on camera.
Oh, she's on camera. Okay, good. All right, let's go ahead and call the meeting to order. It is 4:02 on February 1st. This meeting is being held in person at the HCD Sentinel Meeting Rooms, 310 North Commerce Park Loop. Also going to be held virtually. Then I want a statement, call the order. The Commission on Equitable Housing and Development meeting is now commenced. February 1st, 4 p.m., this meeting is being held in person and virtually. For those who are participating remotely, we ask that you mute yourselves until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in using the call-in number, unmute, dial *6 on your phone, and only use the chat function to request to speak. Now, just note, we're not going to, none of us who are here in person can see the chat function, so you guys can keep it, monitor that. And, okay. Also, to comply with the state open meeting laws, attendance and votes will be done by way of roll call using the audio. Maggie Amato Tejas.
Present.
Wendy Asher. Okay, Wendy's not here. Marianne Bierling.
Present.
Mindy Bernstein.
Present.
Mark Clark.
Yo.
Vicky Casino.
Here.
She's online. Okay. She's not on the screen now. Lori Mazurbo. Tisha Tallman. I'm here. Ray Winch.
Here.
Kenny Wong. Jay Young.
Here.
Ann Chenenka. Mark Manning. Tisha Pasquale. Oh, Tisha's here. Hi. Okay, Betty Villegas. Marcos Ismail. I had lunch with him today, so he's going to be here. Mike Edmonds. All right. Okay, so we have a hard stop for Maurice at 4:30 today. So without objection, I'd like to reorganize the agenda and move agenda item number 4 first, and then we'll loop back and do agenda items 2 and 3. Is there any objection to that? Okay. Then we're going to jump to agenda item number 4, which is a presentation by Maurice Walker. So, Maurice, you have the floor.
Okay, good afternoon. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep.
See me okay?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So I apologize. I did not make it in person. But I think I just wanted to kind of help convene and get us together to start thinking about what equity looks like for the Commission on Equitable Housing. I know you all had reached out a couple months ago around the fall time, right before the holidays, saying, hey, you know, we want to think about what does an equity statement look like. And respectfully, you know, I had kind of pushed it back on you all to say, you know, I would love to show up and give my support and guidance on what that looks like. But I didn't want to write that for you all, right? Because you all at the table are the subject matter experts who are coming together to think about what equitable housing looks like. So I think it's just rightfully so for you all to come up with what that mission looks like. So I understand that we only have 30 minutes right now. I also understand that, you know, today is just the start of a much larger conversation, which I'm sure you guys have been having for years, as you guys have been convening as a council. So just know that this is not meant to be something that's rushed, and like there has to be a set in stone idea of what equity means for your commission. So don't feel like you have to have that answer today or even Friday. I do understand that you guys are having a larger session happening tomorrow, and you guys are just kind of doing some strategic planning for the work that you're setting forth. So is that something that we can all agree and understand and kind of just take away with our expectations that you're not going to solve it today? And that's okay. So I don't have that expectation, and I hope you guys are not holding yourself to that tall order of an expectation to know what equity looks like for equitable housing. But I did want us to kind of start that conversation worked for you all, and I kind of want to hear from you all so that when we continue to have these conversations, I can come better with a better vision on where you all are standing. So kind of some of the first questions that I have is, you know, if you could say what a perfect world would look like for housing for everybody, what is the future state of equitable housing for the community? And as a psychologist by trade, I am totally fine with silence. So just because it's silent, that doesn't mean that someone has to fill in that space, recognizing that everyone is processing and everybody's thinking. So I will kind of just monitor the space in the room. But my first question to you all is, if you could say what a future state of equitable housing look like, what would that be? And just popcorn, raise your hands, round table, however you see fit. It does not need to be something that's super formal. And then maybe if someone on your team could be kind of taking notes, or maybe one of the staff folks from HCD can kind of take notes for you all. But what would that look like, the future state of equitable housing in a perfect world? What do you envision? What do you want to see?
That everyone who wishes to... or who we, and everybody is, has accessibility to shelter, to housing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Equitable, for me, that means a family of five would have enough bedrooms for all of them versus one person doesn't need necessarily five bedrooms in, you know. And then we have hundreds of thousands of individuals who are not provided equitable housing opportunities due to the nature of their disability and illnesses, and that we create a system of support and care so that they do eventually get into shelter, changing how we see serious mental illness and substance use disorders, our citizens who are vulnerable and unsheltered, get into shelter equitably.
Thank you.
So, in the housing equity study that was done by ASU, they tried to address that question to define housing equity. So they looked at Chicago, Seattle, and Austin. All three of them did a housing equity study. Chicago and Seattle did not lay out a strict definition for housing equity, but Austin did, and their definition was an environment where integration, diversity, and inclusion are champions. I thought that was it's a little bit ambiguous, but it's a very...
Jim, could you repeat that? We couldn't hear you.
Any of it, or just the last part?
The part of how Austin defined it.
So Austin defines housing equity as an environment where integration, diversity, and inclusion are championed.
Perfect. And Jim, I'm sorry, I did not read up on that document. I could not open it in my computer.
Okay. Netta, do you mind emailing out those attachments? This is a PDF.
I know it was a PDF, but my computer.
Yeah, so
anyway,
mine is a little bit more nuanced. I think that what I keep going back to, no matter how many reports I look at in regards to housing equity, I come back to the structural issues and the hyper-segregation that Tucson has, economically, racially, ethnically, culturally. And I don't know how we can address, so I'm looking at structural issues, but I'm also looking at the individualized solutions, right? Because I work with folks in shelters and who are experiencing homelessness. But it's difficult to address the individualized circumstances without at the same time addressing the structural issues that exist here in Tucson. You know, we know that there is a line and a barrier that economically is signified by River Road. We have high opportunity areas and high vulnerability areas. And I don't know how you can address opportunity in an equitable manner without addressing the structural barriers that put in place these high opportunity and high vulnerability areas of the city. So, you know, when I think of what does housing equity look like, you have to address both simultaneously. So it's not just about lack of affordable housing, because it is, but it's also, well, what are the things that are putting in place the continuous cycle of lack of affordable housing? I spoke with someone today, and one of the things that is startling to me that I looked at recently is that we were an affordable community at one time. 86% affordability in 2012. We're now down to 38.6% in 2023. So, you know, and in the last 3 years, post-COVID years, that has taken a dramatic turn by 35 percentage points. So, you know, all those things that we know were in play in Tucson historically, zoning, redlining, the Mapping Racist Covenants Project, all of that is just provide this ripe opportunity for when affordable housing is no longer existent in the stock and the inventory that we're used to, you have these extreme swings into poverty and homelessness.
Thank you for uplifting that. Oftentimes when we talk about housing equity, everyone, the first thing they say is affordable housing. But we have to come to this realization that there is a huge gap and disconnect between what is actually affordable housing, because we're doing oftentimes, and I'm going to use Minneapolis as an example because I can speak to it because I worked and did that work. The mayor talked about it so much, and we built housing for that. But it was never affordable, because these new developments that folks were putting out, people who really needed the resources to live there didn't have the financial means to do that. Mm-hmm. So the disconnect was the development. And oftentimes people are looking at what is my return on investment of this housing property, right? That is so crucial. Yeah, sorry, go ahead. But I just want to say thank you for acknowledging that.
We're chasing two things, right? So there are two things going on simultaneously. One is there's a decrease in affordable housing units, affordable housing stock, right? That's because prices have been driven up. And then we have this other thing going on, which is, you know, what do we need going forward, right? So we've got a deficit, and then we have a losing, we're losing units. So I don't even know how we ever determine, like, how much stock we actually need, because we're constantly chasing these two things.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say too, is Allison in the room? I think I see her in the corner. Allison, hey, yes, hi. Did you guys get to see the study that came out of the U of A for the racial covenants project? Because that plays into the historical context of the city's outlines and the pop, you know, where housing and land and plots and who lives where.
No.
Several of the commission members were, you know, I think kept up to speed with that. I don't know that we had Jason come back and kind of present once the project was done.
Okay, cool. I just think that will be at some point, I know, like, we're not going to tackle it today, but I think at some point that will be a big instrumental piece when the woman who was just speaking was talking about that, you know, talking about the institutionalization and a systemicness of the housing inequities and the overlap. There was somebody in the room who had their hand, and then.
I think when we talk about equitable housing, often use phrases like lack of affordable housing. And I think it's really important to talk about, like, why that is too. Like, it's not just a lack of affordable housing, it's like a high amount of wealth extraction. And if we're not talking about the people who are profiteering off of this and the systems that allow for that kind of profiteering, I think we stay in this cycle. So for me, part of a vision of equitable housing is a lot of decommodification of housing, and at the very least, some control over the amount of wealth that can be extracted from rent, whether that's like pretty significant rent control or whether that's like massive community land trusts, deed restrictions put on properties around the amount of money that it can be sold for. But for me, I think when the profit motive is there, I don't know that we ever actually get to real equitable housing.
Thank you. Go ahead. Yes.
Who, me, Marianne?
Yes, Marianne.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Sorry I couldn't make it in person. For me, I think equitable housing is housing that allows people to live where they can thrive the way they want to. So there's a lot of choice in it. But to touch on a couple things, in the study that we looked at says there is no evidence that Tucson experienced redlining, and it did, which is right at the beginning in the history and demographics of the study. I know when I worked at Primavera, we sued what became First Interstate Bank for redlining, and we won. So I think there's a little bit more history to delve into with regards to what created some of these boundaries that people are living in. Because, you know, I believe lenders were partly responsible for this. And I also think this housing is just one piece of this whole equity discussion. And so we as a commission aren't going to be able to tackle, you know, everything else. And you mentioned, Larice, you know, return on investment. Well, we've been forced to have to look at it like that because government funding has now turned into debt instead of, you know, a deed that makes us be affordable for 30 years. You know, it's debt. Now we're having to pay debt on properties that are supposed to be affordable, where we're keeping the rents low and hoping not to have to charge utilities so that poor people don't have to make a decision on paying utilities or rent, because if they don't have their lights on, they can be evicted. So I think this whole debt situation that affordable housing projects are put into, that has one of the things that we should be looking at, along with the lack of affordable housing, but also that in affordable housing or in market rate housing, the way that they were allowed to increase rents was unethical, and it caused a lot of issues in this town and elsewhere in the country. And you know, I found out that a lot of these market rate properties use the Yardi system, and Yardi is behind a lot of these rent increases because it doesn't take into consideration in its formula that everybody uses what's going on in the economy. So we as property managers or owners who are working with Yardi, we can address that in terms of, you know, market rates using Yardi and increasing the rent. So, you know, the rent increases, the lack of affordable housing, and the fact that projects who are skinny in their budgets anyway have to worry about debt, those are issues that I think our problems in terms of the affordability and equity side of things. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I know I have 10 minutes. And again, do not be mad at me. I told y'all this was not going to nearly get us anywhere to where we need to be. But I hope that this conversation starts to help you start thinking, and why I can't just say, yes, I'm going to tell you what equity is and how you should say it for housing equity, right? Because it's so complex and it's a larger picture that we're trying to see. But what you can do as a commission is figure out what is your role and what do you want your role a part of this commission to have influence on the much bigger picture. Before I transition out, and I have some stuff that I'm going to send Allison to for you guys to continue to marinate and think about, and a little bit of homework before I come back at the next month's meeting. But I do want to share with you all the City Council's statement on equity. So the city of Tucson wrote one prior to my arrival when they first called out for this position. It states that within the city of Tucson, equity means that our policies, our policy-making processes, our delivery of services, and distribution of resources, account for the different histories, challenges, and needs of the people we serve. And I will drop that in the chat and email that over so Allison can share that all with you all. But that is what Marin Council had wrote for their equity statement when they put out the ordinance to establish an equity office for the city of Tucson.
Larissa, before you go, I also wanted to just highlight that the commission does actually have a definition that we've created. So I know we're kind of working on it, but it's in the equity study that went out to the commission, and I'm sure it's other places, but we came up with this definition. Equity addresses people's needs based on their life and historical contexts. Prejudice, bias, and other social divisions disproportionately impact people's access to opportunity. Opening opportunities to minority populations requires creative solutions for our community to empower affected people to recover and thrive.
That sounds really good to me. That's almost there to your statement of housing equity. I think talking about the access to housing specifically, that line and verbiage added into your statement, I think that sounds like a very good place for what you're talking about and how you want to establish that. I apologize. I had no idea you had a statement already. So I did not mean to waste your time starting to think about that, but that is awesome. I really like that. And I would like to see a copy of that and kind of play around with the language and stuff. But I think there's room to add the housing component, which can help us start to think critically about that.
Was anyone taking notes on the statements that were coming up? I'd love to have those in a minute.
Yes.
We cannot hear anything.
Can you hear us now?
I can hear you, Jim.
I was just asking if those statements that were made during the session were in the notes to be able to continue this conversation.
Yes, and this is recorded, I believe. I see a recording button.
So, Maurice, have you seen the housing equity study that was done by the ASU students?
No.
For the city of Tucson? I think it'd be good if you got a copy of that.
Okay.
And reviewed it. So one of the recommendations from the study in terms of next steps was to define, kind of building on what Tish was talking about, was to define the indicators to measure housing equity. And so it gave us a list of about 20 different indicators that go along with the vulnerability index and the opportunity maps. And so that, my thought coming into this meeting was that as a group, we should, maybe try to look at those indices,
mm-hmm.
try to define, how do we measure housing equity? Which indices do we use? How can we measure that going forward?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think on the flip side of that, so, and I will try not to draw this out too much, but when we're thinking about the city's equity action plan, so we just finalized our contract to put forth an actual equity action plan for the city. We are bringing our consultant on. But one of the things that we need to define for us is, what does success look like for equity metrics for the city, right? So we kind of have to start working backwards before we can go forward, right? We have to identify, what does success look like in measuring up to equity, and what are those principles when we decide what those categories will be? And for example, it'll be like workforce will be one big key thing that the city will work on towards equity goals. Hiring, getting folks in the door, but then also retention, right? What are the current data that exists, and how are we going to use that data to determine what our metrics are going to be going forward? So it's so large and complex, but I'm super excited to hear the work that you guys are doing. And I believe Laura Sharp on my team is hopefully supporting you all, especially with the equity priority index that we are creating, that we're trying to map and have all the departments utilize from a data lens. So again, this is just scratching the surface of a much deeper conversation. So I appreciate you all for letting me be here and start to facilitate that dialogue. But I think that absolutely getting together with that report would be really good for me.
One final question before you leave. How do you want to be involved going forward?
I'm happy to be involved as much as you all would like me to be. A lot of people say they don't ask me because it's just me. Yes, I don't have a deputy. But if you ask me early in advance so I can get it on my schedule, my calendar, I'm always here to be a thought partner and to support you, especially supporting boards and commissions. I did a lot of board commission work back in my previous organization, and I firmly do value our community volunteers who are sitting on these. How do we make sure that you have a voice, but utilizing that voice through tools and resources as an organization? So I'm a huge supporter of boards and commissions. So I would like to be involved as you all see fit. And I'm happy to make that accommodation. It's recorded. So you can say that, hey, you said you would help us or be a part of this process. So I'm definitely sticking to it.
Okay, thank you. Jim, thank you very much.
Jim, I have a question. What Jay just read, is that a formal statement from the commission or is that from the committee?
It's on the equity report that the ASU students did, and they found it. So I don't know how to answer that more than it's in the study, and I'm not sure where else it is.
My guess is that's from the shared language conversation when we first formed the commission. That's my guess. I'd have to double check.
Well, I think it's something definitely to work with, and maybe, you know, Larice can help us, you know, facilitate us coming up with something that, you know, we as a commission agree upon as well. So thank you for bringing that up.
And just for everybody's reference, that's on page 2 of the, Neto emailed out 2 parts of the housing study. It's on the context for problem report.
Oh, yeah.
Under the introduction on page 2.
Yeah, I see that.
I just found it. It's on the C8 at the bottom.
I'm not seeing that on page 2, so whatever.
We'll make sure. So I think right with Larice sending out kind of the homework that she talked about, we can send out just like a catalog of our current equity resources and like where we stand. We'll get that email out to make sure that you know kind of where all of these things are.
Also, I think the equity studies are on the CEHD webpage. You know, we've brought them to the committee before. So if you can't open them through your email, just go to our page and scroll down through the meetings and I'm sure you'll find them.
Well, thank you all for your time. Again, I know that was like just the start of something, but I'm looking forward to supporting you all. I'm committed to the work of equity in general, but I'm also committed to supporting you all as a commission to make sure you have the support, the vision, and the clarity to be able to do the work that you have been tasked to do as a commission. And I hope that the work that's coming out of the equity office could be a place of support as well, especially with that large equity action plan. And I'm more than happy to continue to be keep you guys briefed on that work, too. I believe in trust and transparency with the community and also internal stakeholders as well as external stakeholders. So if you guys have questions about what we're doing, don't hesitate to give me a call, text, or shoot me an email, but we're more than happy to continue to keep you informed about our progress at the city.
Great. Thank you, Larice. Any final questions for Larice?
Just before you go, since you asked, Jim, I think one of the things that I would love to see is, I know you guys are obviously day in and day out doing work around, you know, what does equity look like in Tucson, measuring it, et cetera, et cetera. So I would really like for the work that we're doing to be in sync with what y'all are doing. So, you know, a meeting of the minds, I think, would be great. And to know, you know, how far along are y'all with your equity work? I mean, I know that there are some exercises in trying to measure equity. I know that that's something we've been struggling with. So, you know, if you guys are kind of down that road a little bit, I think it would be super helpful for us to know so that we can either piggyback on what y'all are doing, you know, mm-hmm. see if we think there's other stuff that, that maybe is missing or could be added. So really understanding where you are in your office in terms of your equity work, I think would be very helpful.
Absolutely. And I think Allison and Ernesto can help us get that scheduled. All right, y'all. Well, y'all have a great evening. And again, thank you so much. And I apologize, I have to run. And yeah, don't hesitate to reach out. I'll drop my contact info in the chat, and Allison can share that information out too as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maurice. Okay, so we're going to loop back to agenda item number 2, which is the review and adoption of our January meeting minutes. Everybody has a copy. Are there any changes to the meeting minutes?
Yes, not for this one in general. But sometimes I think just the discussion held, no actions taken. I know we have these meetings recorded, but when we go back, I'd love like a little more detail in there. Yeah, like, I know how other people feel about that. So if someone didn't go to the meeting and they're not going to read the 2 hours or listen to the 2 hours, if they go back and we want to quickly look at, like, oh, what were we talking about the definition of equity? I'd love a little more detail in the notes.
Who does the meeting minutes?
Stacy.
Stacy's going on. Okay. Okay. Any other suggested changes? Okay. Without objection, the minutes are passed. Agenda item number 3 is a call to audience. This is a time when any member of the public may address the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development. Due to time constraints, the total time allocated for this is 15 minutes. Individuals are allowed up to 3 minutes each. Due to open meeting law, commission members cannot discuss topics that are not on the agenda. Items brought up by the public may be considered as an agenda item for future meetings. Is there anybody online or here?
Nobody online. Thanks.
Yeah. 13 people. Nobody wants to speak.
Nobody in the public, and I don't see any panelists. Hands up. From the public, nobody from the public.
Okay. Okay, we'll move down to agenda item number 5, which is the equity study discussion. Everybody received a copy again. Was anybody not able to get these?
I could not.
You could not.
Are those the documents available through OneDrive?
I could not.
They were sent. There's a link in the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, it asked like you have to put your email in or something, and then I never got the code.
That's not the first time I've had problems with that service.
Yeah, I actually had problems too with it, so I just used the ones that I had.
I apologize, but as Jay said, they are on our webpage. Mindy, I just sent you a copy. We'll see.
Okay, I'll double check.
So I read these again, and there are some interesting takeaways. I think basically what we wanted to do was a circle back. There was a lot of students that spent a lot of time on this, and we really haven't given it our share of attention. So my thought was let's talk about what the findings are, if there's anything that we can take away and use here at Tucson. And I'd like to give everybody the opportunity to speak before I share my thoughts. So
I still haven't received And my printer is broken. I'm trying to get that fixed. I haven't received that, Jim, the articles. And I wanted just to bring up again that I received the documents yesterday. And oh, here, just got it. It's a frustrating thing for me to receive important information that we are going to be discussing as a committee, as a commission, a day or two before the actual event where that content will be just voice. So done with that. Now you know how I feel about it. Okay.
There I am.
I agree. I got these late and it took me a really long time and having to get my IT guy to help open this up so I could have access to it. I read a lot of the context for the problem and I have a lot of questions, but I didn't get to the other one. So I'm wondering if we could table this so that everybody can read through it and people can finish reading through it. There's a lot here, and to do it justice like you want, I think we should all be able to have some time with it.
I wonder if it could be an iterative process where we've discussed today, but I think the conversation of equity is something that will be really ongoing too, for kids to at least have some conversation. I know I think we have tabled this one before.
Yeah, I think these documents have been available since December of 22. They've been distributed several times. Okay. So I guess I agree that let's share the thoughts that we've got and we can continue the conversation. It's not going to be our last conversation, but there were some takeaways that I was hoping to achieve today. Discussions.
Jim, if I could, just to get the conversation started, so there are two documents, if you guys remember, that the students from ASU did. So I just want to give a little bit of context and framework. The first one is the local project tasks report, and it gives a really good kind of framework. Oh, no, actually, I take that back. Which one is the one with the... Yeah, the context. So the one I want to refer to now is the context for the problem report. And it lays a really good groundwork for a lot of the historical things that have gone on in Tucson that have created the housing patterns that we have. You know, it starts, you know, basically from the top talking about the history of segregation, which I think we all have talked about being a big reason why there's a lot of inequities in Tucson's housing market, though it's not the only reason. So I think it does a good job of kind of setting the stage. And then the second report, which is the one with the other title, which is Local Project Tasks Report, really dives into looking at several other communities. I think it's Chicago, Seattle, Austin, maybe another one, and how they're addressing and looking at equity and actually trying to take action, trying to measure equity, things of that nature. So I think it's important to understand kind of what the two reports are about. And I do think, you know, again, just big picture thinking, I do think what Seattle does and Austin, if I'm not mistaken, you know, they really dig into metrics. And again, you know, this is something we've been talking about forever. That's why I brought up with Larice, you know, we need to know what they're doing because I know that the city is working on metrics, but for some reason we don't get that kind of conversation from them about, you know, hey, we're asking for a ton of metrics or metrics to measure, but we're not getting a lot of feedback about what's going on there. So I think it's important to look at what those cities are doing in terms of metrics and how year after year they're looking at the change in those metrics. So you know, those are the things that I just wanted to kind of to frame the conversation. And so folks have a little bit of context as we, you know, move into more specifics. So I'll hold there.
Yeah.
So
I looked through this a few times. The indicators, I think at one of the meetings I requested like an update on whether any of the recommendations had been pursued by the city. And I think the response we had to date was this opportunity aspect or success measures and the participatory nature of individuals in the community. However, I think we, and I understand that, and that's great, it's participatory. I remember we talked about how we thought that was fantastic, but ultimately there's gotta be data capture, right? So that we can track it. So it's gotta be apples to apples instead of apples to oranges, right? So we have to, there has to be agreed upon, I think for our commission, we could make a recommendation. City can do what it wants to do, whether it accepts our recommendation or not.
Right.
But I do think that ultimately, if we want to measure housing equity, aside from housing stock and how deficient we are in this or that, if we want to go beyond that and actually look at housing equity as a whole, then we definitely need to know what indicators we suggest be tracked year after year after year. So even when we get to this point, it'll just be a baseline.
Yeah, a couple things, I guess, that I learned that I thought were interesting, starting with the context. So on page 6, the poverty levels, it surprised me the disparity in wages. So the highest concentration of people living in poverty exists in the southern portion of Ward 3, which is kind of the whole Thrive and the 05 area, and the westernmost area in Ward 6, with 50% of the residents living below the poverty line. So I was a little bit surprised by that. There's the other kind of in line with what you were talking about before, which is the vulnerability index. Mm-hmm. So page 9 has a map of the vulnerability index. It shows which portions of town are our most vulnerable populations. I think that's, you know, if we want to make recommendations about where we should be focusing our concentration of housing going forward, I think that's a very important map, along with the map on page 11, which addresses the transportation disadvantage. They call it transportation disadvantage score, but it's basically what they said was that 11.9% of Tucson households do not possess a car. They rely on public transportation. And you can see kind of the areas of town that have the poorest transportation, and it's, I guess, not surprising that it is somewhat in line with the vulnerability index, page 9. The other thing I thought that was interesting is page 14. They talk about it's focused on homelessness and the special populations experiencing homelessness. Now, I think the homeless numbers have changed pretty substantially since 2020. I think they've more than doubled since then. But you can kind of see we all have perceptions of what the homeless population is made up of. And I thought, you know, having concrete data like this showing, you know, this is actual information on people with serious mental illness, substance abuse disorders, survivors of domestic violence, veterans. I think that's interesting in terms of, you know, is there certain segments of the population that we should be trying to address for homeless population. So I think those are the kind of the big takeaways for me personally as I was going through this. And I think it, like, just piggybacking on what you said, I think where we need to get to from an equity perspective is defining, you know, the indicators that we want to measure.
Jim, I can't hear you.
I think where we want to go long term, in terms of as we look forward and goals, is defining the indicators of how we measure equity. So page 27 of the task report, I think it listed like roughly 20 different potential indicators.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to those, the city of Tucson has a neighborhood vulnerability index and the opportunity maps that have additional potential indicators on top of these. And I think, you know, maybe as a next step, as we think about goals moving forward, is, you know, I think a good goal for the commission would be to define the indicators on how we measure this going forward.
Right. I completely agree. And I would add, I think there's at least one more document that I think we might want to consider, and that's the opportunity report that Jim Kaiser put out. It has, additional information. And the reason why I thought of it, Jim, is because you were just talking about the disparity in over time wage differentials in the different geographical areas. But Jim Kaiser also, through the research through Raj Chetty of Harvard, one of the things that was also exposed is that even the wealthiest Tucsonians have less opportunity nationally. So, you know, even as compared to the nation, we're about $10,000 less per person per year. And I think he estimates a $2.8 billion shortfall that we're not bringing into our economy and not investing in our folks who are experiencing homelessness and poverty. So I think that might be good to also consider, because there are a number of things that Raj Chetty out of Harvard looked at, and looking at the children over time too, and your likelihood as a child, if you grow up in certain areas, your likelihood of remaining in poverty becomes exponentially greater.
You have a copy of that on board? Can you send
it? I will. Yes.
I'm also reminded, we had that nice presentation of the Tucson equity data strategy, mm-hmm. and I'm sure many of the indicators for that. Maybe for us to be to pair those, see what more could be added to it.
The Tucson?
Equity data strategy. We were looking at some maps. It had all the wards on the census tract.
Mary Ann's hand up.
Yeah. So I did read this, the problem. I didn't get to the other one yet, but damn, and I'm sorry if this has been with us since 2022. That's embarrassing. But in the introduction of the problem, they talk about the study group acknowledges the presence of three factors contributing to housing equity: affordability, safety, and health. It would be nice to maybe see these defined or for us to think about it. And as I said earlier, this report says there was no evidence of redlining in Tucson, but there was. On page 4, the aging in place, I think, you know, for us, we are looking at, and we've discussed it before, an elderly population that is growing and is living on a fixed income. And more we're getting calls from people who are elderly on fixed incomes who are losing their housing because of the increases in rent. So it's, you know, they talk here about paying mortgages, rent, repairs, and other housing related expenses, and housing that, you know, then the next step is, you know, their housing goes into disrepair. One of the things that on page 5 with the social inequalities within Pima County, I'm surprised that they didn't include South Tucson, because South Tucson is surrounded by Tucson on all four sides. And I think that that piece of what is happening in South Tucson as a part of what's going on within Pima County, we should be included in a study like this. But the other thing that was really interesting is on page 7, the drop in the percentage of population living below the poverty line between 2014 and 2019, I thought was a big decrease. And it would be nice, I would like to know more about that for our discussion going further. You know, what was the cause of that? You know, was it a mass exodus? What was it attributed to? And, you know, what, you know, races were, and ethnicities were, you know, how were they affected? That, I think that was one of the most interesting things I saw in all of this. And then there's another one. Jim mentioned the transportation, you know, and if you all have a chance, I really recommend going to the city HCD's PCHIP, you know, part of their website. It's really, really interesting. And a lot of what's in this, in these studies comes from that website too. So on page 13, when it says homelessness by race, ethnicity in Pima County, they say, interestingly, whites have the most significant fraction of their population experiencing homelessness. And over the last 12 years of working with homeless people, we've had a lot of discussion about that internally and with other agencies is, you know, why is that? Is it because of cultural, you know, norms for, you know, African Americans or Native Americans? Is it that we're not seeing more, or is it truly that they're just not homeless? There's just this was a good report, a good study by them. It raises a lot of questions, and I really would like to be able to sit and talk to them and ask, you know, more about some specific things that are in here and, you know, some of the backup. Anyway, that's all I got.
I think one, if we're talking about different studies, I think the Prosperity Initiative's study is very accurate and very up to date. Too, if we're actually looking at Tucson data, this is wonderful, and I think we should totally read it and use it. And also, like, looking to people who've been doing this work for a long time in Tucson, and I'm very professional in that, whatever professional means. But I think there are some things that are even more up to date there. In terms of metrics, one metric that I think they don't talk about in this, and I think is actually true in almost everywhere that I see equity measured, is there's no measure of who owns the property and how much wealth is being transferred to property owners. I think it's hard to study that. I think it's hard to find who owns, trying to get a map of it. There's nothing about how many short-term rentals there are. Again, I think that's a deliberate thing. I don't think this is any fault of anyone doing the studies, because that information is not very transparent. But I think that's an important part of the picture. And I think if we're looking at equity, it reminds me of, like, you can talk about being in a drought, or people talk about, like, oh, a country that's in famine, like the potato famine, they're like, oh, that was a crop failure. No, the Irish were exporting huge amounts of the potatoes to food to other countries. And I think when we look at, like, where some of the wealth extraction is, like, I think wealth extraction is an important part of the picture when we talk about equity. Yeah, and then one, if we're, maybe a different conversation about the Prosperity Initiative. I think there are really great suggestions there. that's similar to this, but one thing that I think is in overall of some of these frameworks is there are a lot of talks about like moving to high opportunity areas. But I think some of that framework too is like based in this idea of like a few people getting out rather than transforming some of those areas of like, yeah, it's great if some people get out of Cancer Alley, but like Cancer Alley shouldn't exist. Like some people might be able to get access to some of these resources, but I think really when we talk about equity, that's an important piece of it. It's not about a few people getting more opportunity, but no one being exposed to that harm in the first place. And then I guess my last thing is, I really appreciate here some of the breakdown in, not the one that was comparing the cities, but the one looking at Tucson, of just straight up talking about whose homes were stolen and whose homes were demolished. And I think, again, if we're talking about equity and we're talking about the home ownership rates today, we have to look at it in that context. And especially, like, the city of Tucson can have very clear links to some of that. We're talking about the TCC. I know there's a lot of people are very familiar with that history, is what kind of repair has already been done around that at other times where people's homes have been destroyed and other types of land and labor theft, and incorporating that into our equity plan.
When you say TCC, is that the convention center?
Oh, yeah, the Tucson Convention Center. Okay. And I think in this study, they mentioned too, in El Pueblo, over 700 homes being demolished in the El Pueblo housing development too. And I'm sure others that are not named here. And,
I wanted to follow up as well, just kind of random thoughts that I've been jotting down. But, you know, one of the things I also come back to is the city has a lot of great reports, I think, that have a lot of this information. A lot of it's out there. I think part of the issue that I'm having is just stitching it all together to then move forward with it. So, you know, that was kind of the idea behind the request to Larice of like, well, what are y'all doing? You know, what other studies are out there and how do we kind of weave them together so we don't have to recreate the wheel? Because again, I think we kind of know a lot of the information is there. It's not unknown. I don't think we need to uncover lots of new stuff to move forward. The measurement's important. We've already talked about that. And then, you know, again, the idea of measuring or looking at where are the inequities and what do we do about them? Because, you know, when we're talking about segregation and the things that have created our housing patterns, the amount of resources and force of government and private actors that went into creating the housing patterns that we have to understand that nothing, well, not nothing, that's not accurate, but not much has been done, I think, like to your point, to repair the harm that's happened. So we kind of think that, oh, this is just the way things happened. And, you know, if we kind of nibble around the edges, maybe we can do something. But there was a lot of force and, you know, essentially the capacity of the nation to make it happen over a period of time. I think we need to think about the urban versus the suburban as well. I think these reports get to it a little bit, but, you know, again, kind of out of that context of segregation and how the markets were set up to favor whites over essentially everybody else. You know, what about Marana? What about Oro Valley? What about Sarita? We can't talk about Tucson and equity in Tucson without talking about the region as a whole and kind of the role that those communities play, because I think they still, I mean, you know, you look at it now with the state government talking about, you know, taking back some of the control in terms of zoning and whatnot, and you see who doesn't want to have that happen. It's cities and towns because they don't want to disturb their kind of communities they set up. And, you know, where is that? What's that history from? What's that about? I think we need to be conscious of, you know, looking at the region as a whole. I also think we really need to talk about housing stability. Who's getting evicted? What are the help, what kind of help is in place for families that are facing eviction? I would argue it's basically nothing. You know, the EELS program was created to help people that were going through the process. But, you know, when we're talking about housing stability and the things that are causing people to move and to get evicted, there are concrete things that we can do. Again, there are examples from around the country. So really looking at housing stability and what does it mean to change structures and create policies that are actually pro-people and pro-keeping people in place, because, you know, I think if you look at the system now, it's about landlords and it's about making it as easy as possible for landlords to evict people. That's the reason that, you know, evictions are so high. Gentrification, you know, the study goes into gentrification. One of the main things we're supposed to be doing is addressing gentrification. I believe it's Austin that has, you know, basically a system where they're looking at using data, you know, where are the vulnerable places, what phases of gentrification are in place. And then, you know, there are policies, again, that can be put in place to address gentrification. And I say all of this thinking about what we're getting ready to do tomorrow, which is our strategic planning. So taking all of this information, what is it that we can do as a commission to, you know, operationalize this and actually start making some change? To me, that's the thing that I would really love to get to tomorrow is, you know, what can we do and what's the plan to get there? Because obviously this is a hugely heavy lift. I mean, we're talking about decades and decades that have created it, but, you know, where are the kind of leverage points that we have as a commission to actually, you know, suggest some policies or make some changes? So, you know, I'm really trying to think about, you know, how do we take all of this, what we're talking about today, and again, think tomorrow, you know, when we get together tomorrow, you know, where do we want to be at 5:30 tomorrow in terms of, you know, what, how we're spending our time going forward, and, you know, where do we think that there are actually the points of leverage where we can make a difference? Again, all very challenging, but, you know, I'd love to get to a point where we're, you know, we have a plan and we're going to, you know, really attack a couple of key issues where we can make some change. So just a lot of random stuff. Oh, and I'm so glad you brought up the Prosperity Initiative, because there is that framework that the city and the county have basically passed or agreed to use. And so I think if we can start working within that framework, I think that that will be a big help, because the city and the county have already said, yes, we like it, we want to use it. So definitely a big win for equity, and something that I think we really need to kind of be in alignment with.
And depending on what the city likes to do in regards to our direction, what we can provide, I do think that the Prosperity Initiative is one that could easily fall through the cracks. And that if you know, we could be a body that assists in providing recommendations based on that initiative.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what's been said. I think for me, I'm seeing, like, if we can use those indicators to figure out what those are and drive those resources. So, some of that over there. And put that into the bigger picture. While at the same time addressing some of the more structural issues of, you know, what are some of the limits to what the city is able to provide and do, continue using units, or, you know, letting the prices get larger. So I think if we can come to a strategy that kind of puts us in the long-term thinking as well as some immediate actions, you know, resources can go and how we can best utilize all these reports and the data that we do have.
One of the recommendations. Solutions that Austin came up with, which I thought was a very creative thing. I wasn't sure if that was going to be something that could be done here, or, and this is directed towards you. But so Austin is trying to encourage high density development in the downtown corridor. So they enacted a program which encourages developers to achieve that goal by allowing them to create building heights and densities in exchange. Providing community benefits in the form of affordable housing. So developers who seek the benefit from the bonus must use at least 50% of the bonus area provided on site to provide on-site affordable housing, or pay a development bonus fee into the affordable housing trust fund for the city. I thought that was a pretty creative solution. I know we've been talking about, you know, kind of looking at some of our zoning codes specifically for building heights, setbacks, density, and something more enacted along these lines that might be a potential solution to help fund the housing trust fund for the city. Which when we met with the mayor, was one of her questions, is, okay, where does the money come from?
And I appreciate that that example is from Austin, because they have the same thinking about, we can't make like a rezoning dependent on providing affordable housing, but if they've been able to,
yeah, if there's a density bonus,
exactly,
potentially it would work. So yeah, I mean, that's something I think we're looking at right now, Jim, is the zoning changes along corridors and especially transit corridors to allow higher density development, really geared towards mixed use housing, and with some additional incentives for affordable housing. And I think just what is that calculus, what is the right density, and what is that benefit that we want to get for that is going to be, you know, what we need input from all of you on, so we get that right. But yes, we're actively working on that right now.
And what you just did, Corey, what are the obstacles to getting these things done? Because how can we have discussions for so long and nothing happens? We are facing these challenges. And so, you know, I don't know. I feel like sometimes we need to look at why does it take so long? What can we do? You know, when we talk about these indicators, it's also, I think, understanding historically, what caused these things to happen? You know, we know what the indicators are, but what was the cause? Who were the actors? And, you know, are we kind of set up similarly so that we can just continue to have these issues? I don't know. I feel like kind of we have to regress and get to the basics, in a sense, to address these issues, because I feel like it's, we've been talking about this like commission for years. I don't know. It's the same issue and it's never been resolved. And maybe it's not resolvable, but how can we improve it? How can we address it in a way that's meaningful? I don't know. I know that we've been talking about it for like
sometimes it feels like we take two steps forward and one step back.
Yeah.
Sometimes two steps back.
Yes, just as an example to that, I mean, would there, you know, on the issue of preemption, would there be anything against this commission, I don't know, like coming up with a statement that says, hey, we identify this as a real barrier for treating a lot of the things that we see with the community? Would that be beyond us? Could we raise that to make conversation with us?
Yeah. We've done recommendations. I think looking forward, that's kind of, you know, one of the reasons this was put forth was to advise mayor and council on things that could be done, you know, levers that could be adjusted. So I think that's kind of that was how we came up with a lot of the recommendations we did. We looked at the HAS plan, at the different, you know, things that have been done, and said, okay, we think these are going to have the most impact. You know, where I've been struggling, you know, just looking forward, is there's only so many things we can do, right? There's only so many levers that can be pulled that will affect the supply of affordable housing units. And so it's like, you know, you can keep making suggestions, but it's going to be diminishing returns, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, that was kind of our question. We were meeting with the mayor, is okay, well, do you want us to keep giving you recommendations because you guys accepted the ones, but none of them have been really implemented yet, so you don't know what the impact is of those. you know, do you want us to try to bird dog the previous recommendations? But I don't think they want us to try to hold them accountable. That's not the reason that we're here. So, we're in a kind of a strange spot right now as a commission, because we have provided recommendations. You know, I think everybody in the city is trying to figure out how to implement them, what can we implement. As we think about this retreat tomorrow.
Maybe also talking about what's keeping them from implementing.
Yeah.
You know, but that's like being totally honest about why. I mean, it's really easy to say, oh, just throw some money at it. And I don't really think that that's a long-term solution to this. I think it's what are those challenges, obstacles? What is keeping us from being able to?
We're kind of getting into the next agenda. But you want to restate your question?
I agree with that. I recognize where the time of where we're but I like the comment, because it kind of forces us to look further ahead too. I hope other communities would find, come out and support, or also come to agreement that maybe some of these things really are in the way.
Two or three articles. Most of them are out of Phoenix. Maybe it's based on a couple of people I've talked to about it, it does seem like it's getting worse. Or, 2 to 3 years sometimes to get through zoning. And I think that's one of the issues that we have as a community. There's really not a ton of properties that are zoned for, high density development, affordable housing projects. And, that's one of the huge challenges. How we increase the stock.
Yeah, Mindy has
it. Oh, go ahead, Mindy.
Thank you. I ought to have written this down to be clear. There's an elephant. I have been seeing an elephant in the room over these years that our issue of people who cannot afford housing and have lost their housing is a national global crisis where I know in the United States, big financial corporations have bought up many of the single family residences and multiple family apartment complexes and have raised rent to the place where the market will bear. And I know people who got a $500 raise in their rent overnight or the next month. But the other issue is beyond the scope of the city of Tucson, that we as a nation need to have a fundamental shift on who has and the haves and the have-nots, that we are clinging to an outdated political system that enabling and allowing so many hundreds and thousands of people to be living in poverty, where so many people are living so far above that poverty line. And I think if we can, that's where that shift needs to happen. in order for everyone to have equity. That's what I believe. And I would love to be proven wrong about that. So, yet I believe we need to infuse our system with more money specifically geared towards housing first programs and providing services and supports for individuals that are living unhoused. We have, as a society, tolerated people living without housing. And I find that abhorrent. So I'll probably talk a little bit more about this tomorrow. I would like some reality checks about the way that I'm thinking about things. And thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mindy. So just to circle back, this agenda, I think the takeaway I'd like everybody to have is think about it specifically for tomorrow. What are our equity goals? What should we be striving for as a commission? And, you know, my personal feeling is if we could just define the kind of the indices of how we measure it over time, I think that would be a great goal for us as a commission. I think another potential goal is to have the city commission a housing equity study, a real housing equity study. I think that's another potential goal. That's a recommendation that we can make if they do that. So, but be thinking about that and let's be prepared to talk about that tomorrow. I think this is, as we said at the start of the agenda, this is going to be an ongoing conversation, but there's some really good information in this. These students spent a lot of time putting this study together. And if you've not read it, I would encourage you to read it. It's maybe an hour to get through it. It's not that long of a read. And, you know, if we can get some of these other materials out, I think that all that stuff would help as well, because it is getting the information in this is a little dated now. So, okay, any final comments before we move to the next agenda item? Okay, agenda item number 6 is the pre-retreat update. So,
can I jump in?
Yes.
First of all, Commissioner, it's so good to see you in the flesh. Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness gracious. And the commissioners online, we hope to see you tomorrow at the retreat. We do look differently, don't we? So, yes, the retreat is on tomorrow. Reminders. One, you should have received from the consultants the agenda for tomorrow. The room will be available to us at 12 noon. Meeting starts at 12:30. We'd like to have you here at 12 noon because we have some fabulous pizza and salad. If that doesn't meet your high culinary standards, please bring a sack lunch. And we'll have some leftover treats as well. We will have this configuration more or less. The consultants will do their presentations here. This is an in-person meeting to retreat tomorrow. It is publicly posted. If someone does come in, they will be welcome to sit in, but we're not encouraging or inviting people to participate in the retreat. If a commissioner cannot be here, we do have a webinar available for them, but we would prefer that we all be here in person. Vanessa, am I missing anything? The mayor will be here and she will talk with the commission and she will spend some time answering questions and conversing.
She's here at the beginning now, right? Because she was going to be showing up, I think, at 1 or 2.
She's here at the beginning. Here to 1:30. She has a hard stop. She has to leave at 1:30.
Here for the first hour.
Yes.
Are you gonna print out the agendas and or do we print everything
out? No, I can print them out, but yes. But we're talking about the agenda the consultant sent.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
I will print out.
I'm thinking I'm going to basically kick this off.
That we have no wind, no rain, no snow.
We're definitely having rain. I want it to rain, so everybody here.
Yeah. I don't think so. Just a welcome and kick it over to the facilitators. Am I missing anything there?
I just want to kind of re-echo what Neto said. It's great to have this in person. I think as a commission, we are going to be much more effective as a group if we meet in person on a regular basis. It's human nature to multitask when you're remote. I catch myself doing it sometimes, even when I'm leading the meeting. So
no, you do not.
So not often. Yeah. I have to try to maintain control. I think that we are more focused, we're more engaged, there's more nonverbal communication that occurs face to face. So I am a huge supporter of this.
So that's a question I asked. Have we made a decision we're going to go to full live meeting from now on?
I don't think I think we're still going to have an online option. But
personally, I think that's something maybe to talk about tomorrow and, you know, collectively come up with.
Yeah, I don't think a firm decision has been made one way or the other, but I kind of, you know, we talked about it like a year and a half ago and everybody said, no, let's keep it virtual. I kind of sense that everybody's more open to it now.
Right.
I was wondering, because our time tomorrow is so precious too, I would love to try to not do too many logistics and try to stay in like the substantive conversation. If we're going to talk about meeting change or something, like do an e-poll or something and bring it up as a quick agenda item as a meeting.
Okay. And big shout out to the facilitators who've been working diligently and hard on creating tomorrow's retreat. You know, they've been doing a lot of lead up work, meeting with you and communicating with staff. That's all I have.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay, any questions about the retreat? Other questions about the retreat tomorrow?
In this room.
Here, yes. Yep, right here.
They said people from the public can come.
Yes.
Is it going to be like call to the audience where they can?
No, there will be no call to the audience.
It'll just be
there.
They can sit here and observe.
And technically, as the chair, if you feel like somebody wants to say something, you can recognize them, but that's totally up to you.
Okay. It's in here on the side of the people speaking.
Yes.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Any CD updates?
Just a couple things. One, thank you again for helping us score the applications that were submitted on the rental housing. Really appreciate that. We're not talking about it now, but sort of open to changes in terms of what that looks like moving forward. Sneak preview in terms of what you'll hear me talk about tomorrow. I'm really trying to challenge HCD staff to, when there's meaningful ways to have the commission input and participation, we want to try to do that. So I think this was sort of one of our first real attempts. Jason, feel free to jump in here, but I'm aware award announcements went out today. So I think at this point, that's going to be public record.
You sure?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hold up. So we awarded 5 convenient awards pending mayor council approval in March, but 5 projects out of the 6 applications we received. So the 5 projects that we are planning to support include Casa Maria's El Camino Apartments, Hope Community Services Shasta Apartments, Spire Development's Rincon Manor Apartments, CPLC's Casa del Pueblo Rehabilitation, the Gorman Company and City Tucson House Rehabilitation, and then the one project that we were not able to support is the Rio Azul project with Rio Azul Partners.
Who's that presenting? Is that
Greg Moore?
Greg Moore's, yeah. Yeah.
So the second item, I just want to give Allison a moment. If I do believe in relating to two things, I know at one of the last commission meetings, we mentioned the poverty and urban stress report. It ended up being continued last mayor and council meeting because I was homesick. It will be on Tuesdays, so, and it will just be an update to mayor and council, nothing too noteworthy. But in terms of thinking about the poverty and urban stress, the Tucson Equity Data Strategy, the Prosperity Initiative, Allison, did you want to sort of jump in on how all these things are related in our brains?
Sure. Yeah. Really appreciate kind of everyone's thoughtfulness with Clarice and kind of the equity measures conversation. I think in my mind, right, like when we had Laura Sharp come in to talk about TEDs or different things, right? The question is kind of how are we going to be using this to measure housing equity? So I just kind of wanted to connect a few of the dots, right? I think this commission with the charge of being the commission on equitable housing and development, I think really has that charge of helping us as a department and a city define that and figure out how we measure that. I think our idea with bringing Larice in was that figuring out how we measure housing equity really comes from that definition. And so that's how we're in line here in terms of having those conversations kind of simultaneously, right? How we're defining it in Larice's mind was really supposed to help guide how we're measuring it. I'll make sure that she's kind of up to date on the conversation that was had today and kind of all of the resources there. I think there are a couple different initiatives going on that make a lot of sense to make sure the commission is running in line with. So one of them is the Tucson Equity Data Strategy. So that Larice mentioned is Laura Sharp in the equity office, used to work at HCB. So she presented, I think it was November, it may have been December, kind of what they're thinking. And right, she's really been focused on this overall equity priority index because the city has been using so many different indices. So vulnerability index, a tree equity score, kind of all these different things. And using that as a tool to kind of measure where we're putting priority for investments as a city overall. I think HCD, CEHD can potentially be the guinea pigs on the next phase of that, which is figuring out the next way that we want to use it, which is how do we kind of define metrics and track equity as it relates to our specific issue. So, right, there'll be an overall equity index, but the kind of next step is helping identify some of those metrics for each of our kind of target areas.
And want to piggyback off of Allison and say, Jay, you mentioned Austin using that in terms of looking for areas of gentrification displacement. Like, to me, that could be a natural, we use the equity data strategy and then build in what is more relevant to those metrics.
And then, several people also mentioned the Prosperity Initiative. So I think since we last met, that was adopted by Mayor and Council. And so the city HCD is working with the county on kind of identifying implementation strategy for that moving forward. And one of the biggest components is identifying metrics to track over time. So all of these sort of related metrics and equity measures, I want to make sure that we're kind of incorporating all of those things into what's being talked about.
that makes that indicator discussion even more.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I got a leave. Thanks, Mark.
So, yeah, there's a question. I mean, when I asked her what she wants her involvement to be going forward, back on my mind, I was wondering if she should be an ex officio member. Sure. If she feels about that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just got the bandwidth or
that's it's worth it before you take it to mayor and council, worth a conversation with her, but if we could do that, I think that would be awesome. Or somebody from her staff, even if it's not her, somebody from the equity office.
Does she have staff?
She does.
She didn't have.
No, she has a couple.
At least two.
At least two.
One of her staff members was attending the housing desegregation subcommittee with some regularity. His name escapes me.
Herrera, his last name.
Okay.
Javier. Yes.
All those people.
Yeah. I didn't know he was attending.
Are we still on HCD?
We are.
Can I step in?
Sure, I do have one more thing, but.
Well, you go first. You go first. Well, just let you know that HCD has been really active in the community. Last night, we had a robust discussion with residents in the Ampine neighborhood regarding our proposal to put in a resource center at the old fire station 8 on Keene Road. We have some people who are not, you know, keen on the idea, but we have people who are also very supportive of creating a resource center. We recently canvassed with Ward 1 staff, South 10th Avenue, 22nd. City, you may know, has a 12-acre site formerly used by Environmental Services. And
22nd, where?
South 10th, across the street from Southside Presbyterian Church. We canvassed 250 homes, left them with information, and surveyed residents. And on Monday, we had a community meeting at Pima Community College downtown for the Thrive and the 05. We presented some new information to residents, and I know I'm leaving out something else. Oh, yes. We have a new director of Housing and Community Development. Her name is Ann Chineka. Getting something. City Manager Michael Ortega submitted her name. And did you say yes?
I did say
okay.
Yes. You'll never guess. Thank you. So appreciate Ernesto. That was exactly, I was going to mention the outreach and engagement. And just, it's interesting, Jim, you talking about Phoenix and sort of hearing more of a lack of support for affordable housing. I will say at all three most recent HCD events, there's clearly a mix in terms of I'm hearing sort of a little more opposition than I've heard in some settings before. And I think just something to be really mindful of in terms of wanting there to be, you know, the commission's charge of wanting there to be more units is sort of helping us sort of figure out how we get over that, what is going to be clearly concerns, distrust, and in some cases, really vicious opposition. So for instance, at the Thrive meeting, one data point, I did have an interaction where it was like, I don't want more poor people here. And so I think just thinking about how to help us, you know, and we're really as a department open to ideas and suggestions in terms of messaging and engagement methods. And really know at the end of the day, ensuring that there's people who support housing and kind of intentional growth, we're gonna need to make sure they show up to things. So I think that's all. Did I miss anything from other HCD staff? Okay. I look forward to tomorrow. Oh, I was actually going to ask you to talk about something.
Okay. Tell me what it is. I just wanted to add one little, since we're on city updates, PDSD update. Just hearing the conversation about, you know,
the community conversation, how to be involved, is that we are updating the general plan right now. And the policies in there around housing and growth and land use do set the stage for the next 10 years. And those become things that we then reference in other plans as a city, our housing plan, neighborhood plans, corridor plans. So having really strong policies in there around affordable housing, mixed income housing, affordable housing across the city and all parts of the city, those are really important things. If those are community goals and goals of this commission, we really want to make sure that's documented in the general plan. So I know some of you have been attending our, we have a working group that's on land use and housing and neighborhoods. We have a variety of other working groups too that also touch on housing, you know, our transportation working group, our community resources working group. We have five different topic areas that have working groups helping us develop the policies. And then we're going to be doing a lot of larger community forums later in the spring. Once the working groups have developed draft policies, we're going to take those out to the broader community to get input. So just really encourage everyone to be involved in Plan Tucson. And we can share links and information relevant. I know we have in the past.
I mean, I guess since you guys brought it up, I'll just take it. But I do think that you know, a lot of what we're talking about is politics, and we need to be upfront with that. And I know that, like, mayor and council can use cover for, you know, being able to support these types of things. So I don't know exactly what we as a commission can do, but I do think the fact that there are essentially no community groups that are involved with the commission, people, I mean, occasionally, but, you know, if there were more groups and people showing up to speak to the commission about these issues and support, I think that, along with the commission articulating that, then going to mayor and council is another thing that we could do. I know it's kind of a heavy lift, and how do you get people to show up, et cetera, but, you know, a lot of this is politics. I mean, NIMBYism is politics at the end of the day. So, you know, how much we consider that or wade into that, I think, you know, something we should consider.
Marianne has her hand up.
Oh, go ahead, Marianne.
Yep. So I just want to circle back to Larice. I just think that on a one-time basis for a few hours with her would be a fantastic way to have her facilitate this discussion on equity. I think she would be valuable, be able to keep us focused, you know, ask the right questions and, you know, help drive and guide us rather than having her have to show up, you know, for our meeting. So that's just my suggestion.
Any other comments or questions for HCD?
One other, just, I really appreciate the suggestion that the commission kind of helped HCD and the city regarding the prosperity initiative and sort of ensuring that there's progression on those different activities. So big fan of that suggestion.
Okay. Anything else on agenda item number 7? Okay, subcommittee updates, I think is going to be pretty fast. Did you guys have a meeting?
We did not have a meeting.
Okay. So housing desegregation did either, correct? Affordable housing did. We basically spent the entire time talking about the retreat and goals for the retreat. So it was primarily led by the facilitators, and we're going to see a lot of that tomorrow. Looking forward, you know, we want to circle back on the affordable housing goal for the city of Tucson, 15,000 units by 2030. So there was some feedback from the commission to the affordable housing subcommittee. We're going to take another crack at revising that, the recommendation document. So I would anticipate for our next full commission meeting, we're going to represent that to this group. Get everybody's stamp of approval and push that forward. The 15,000, no, that was a goal that the Affordable Housing Commission came up with. So we looked at our current stock. It was from the subcommittee where we looked at the current stock of units, what was going to be potentially falling out of affordability, what we thought we could do as a city we could handle as a city. So it's a bit of a stretch goal. but
it's still on the agenda too. If you think the possibility, actually, just
yeah. So I think it's a nice round number that.
And I just want to make sure that if it's scheduled, I think I missed the last one because so just I don't know if there was anything.
So Kenny, you want to be on the affordable housing?
Yeah, I think maybe the meeting that was on the agenda to vote, I think because Ray and I are both new members. I don't know if we ever got to that. Either.
So Ray, did you decide which, so you were attending multiple, I don't know that I heard which one you were.
The desegregation one is going to start up again. But
if you're coming, we're starting up.
It seems like we really need people on that.
Okay, so you're good with that. So, Neto, can you update the roster of those two assignments?
Can I make a suggestion that we spend a little bit of time on that during the retreat? Mm-hmm.
About who's in which subcommittee?
Well, then, whether we're going to have all those subcommittees, given the fact that we were never given the one.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. The risk, you know, one of the things we were talking about is can we cut it back to two? But the problem with that is if you have more than 50% of the overall commission in the subcommittee, then technically it's a full commission meeting. And so it's a balance. We really do need to have three subcommittees. So if there's a change to housing first, we just.
So y'all don't have attendance issues?
We do, but if you have exactly 50% of the members in one subcommittee and the other, and then everybody shows, then it's technically you've got a quorum for full
submission. And one clarification there would be if you want to make it sort of a requirement that everybody be on a subcommittee, but if you did it technically.
Yeah. Okay. So we can.
But I think if I recall on the agenda, I think that will be sort of an outgrowth of one of the agenda items for tomorrow is talking through that. One thing I do, just there were some goals for the Housing First subcommittee, but it's been a little while since I've seen them.
Yeah, so the only thing that's on the website on goals is this one sheet that doesn't identify. It identifies affordable housing subcommittee, permanent supportive housing subcommittee, housing segregation.
So the permanent supportive housing was renamed Housing First. But it's absolutely time to revisit everything, but that happened at some point. Just like the it used to be the segregation subcommittee. I'd appreciate that there was a change.
Desegregation.
Well, and the only goal of that subcommittee is to increase or accelerate.
Agreed, they need work.
Yeah. Okay. I agree with you.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else on subcommittee updates? Okay. So as everybody knows, we've got the retreat tomorrow. Our next full commission meeting is March 7th. If you have agenda items, please send them to Neto, Jay, and I. Affordable Housing Subcommittee meeting is February 21st. Housing Segregation is February 22nd. And the Housing First is February 27th. Final comments? Okay, well, it's 5:45. The Arizona Cal basketball game starts in 45 minutes. Perfect time.
Well planned. There's always a deal with it.